Welcome to our deep dive today. We're going to be taking a look at how Christianity spread through Asia Minor and Greece, so like modern-day Turkey and Greece.
Yeah.
And we're going to be drawing mostly from Dr. Elaine Phillips' lecture on the topic,
right,
focusing specifically on the Book of Acts and the churches that are mentioned in Revelation.
You know, it's amazing to think that this period wasn't just about, like, you know, religious history. It was a time when the maps were being redrawn, so to speak.
Right.
All these empires and cultures were clashing. It really paints a picture of the world these early Christians were trying to navigate.
It's like, well, it makes me think of like how a plant grows, right?
Yeah.
You have to understand the soil and the climate, like the whole ecosystem.
Absolutely.
And that ecosystem in this case was this really dynamic period in history.
Exactly. And one of the key players in that ecosystem, geographically speaking, was Anatolia, which we know today as Turkey.
Okay.
Now, it might seem kind of off the beaten path to us now, but back then, it was a crossroads. Think about the Persian Empire, for instance.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Figures like Darius and Xerxes.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did they use Anatolia as a passage to get to Greece, but their policies also had a direct impact on the Jewish communities living in that region.
That's right. And Dr. Phillips actually highlighted how those same Jewish communities became some of Christianity's earliest converts.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah.
And of course, then you have Alexander the Great sweeping through, shifting that whole power dynamic.
Right.
Suddenly, it's not east to west, it's west to east.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's within this constantly changing landscape that the early church begins to take root.
Okay, so we've got these empires rising and falling, people moving, cultures mixing. It's like a recipe for, I don't know, something.
Definitely a recipe for something big.
Yeah. So let's talk about the Book of Acts.
Right.
Dr. Phillips really emphasizes how it's like a chronicle of the gospel spreading outwards.
It is.
It starts in Jerusalem.
Yeah, and we see this clear progression starting within the land of Israel in places like Caesarea, even reaching out to Gentiles like Cornelius. Then it expands to Samaria, to those Hellenistic Jewish communities.
It's like this wave picking up speed.
Exactly. And that wave, you could say, kind of crashes onto the scene in Antioch.
Oh, yeah, Antioch, which, as Dr. Phillips pointed out, wasn't just any random city.
Oh, absolutely not. Antioch was a powerhouse.
Yeah, it was.
The third largest city in the entire Roman Empire after Rome and Alexandria.
Wow.
And a hub for trade, politics, different cultures.
It sounds kind of like New York City in a way.
In many ways, yes. And even more significantly, it's the place where, for the first time, believers in Jesus were called Christians.
You know, I had never really thought about that before.
Yeah.
The name itself originated in Antioch.
Exactly.
That really tells you something about how important this city was to the development of early Christianity, doesn't it?
It really does. And from this really energetic, vibrant hub that Paul sets out on his missionary journeys.
Okay, so instead of listing all the places Paul visited, which I have to admit, sometimes I just get totally lost.
Yeah, it can be a lot to keep track of.
Yeah. Dr. Phillips mentioned something that really stuck with me. She said Paul's journeys weren't random.
No, not at all.
They were strategic.
Yeah.
It seems like he was choosing certain types of cities and regions for a reason.
He was, and that's where understanding the geography and the political structure of that time really comes in handy.
Right.
It helps you see why he went where he went.
So take his first journey, for example. I was kind of pictured him, I don't know, just wandering around.
Yeah, I think we all have that image at first.
Yeah, but actually he went to Cyprus.
Right. Which was a major Roman province.
And then on to the churches in Galatia.
Which was known for its Roman roads and trade routes. It was all very deliberate.
So he was basically, like, going for the most connected places.
In a sense, yes. He was planting seeds in the most fertile ground, metaphorically speaking.
Okay, so it was about maximizing his impact.
Exactly. And we see that pattern again on his second journey.
Okay, so where did he go?
Well, he was drawn to Philippi, for one. Which was a Roman colony and still has those amazing ruins today.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Phillips showed some pictures.
And then Thessalonica, another major urban center.
Oh, and we can't forget Athens.
Absolutely. The cultural and philosophical heart of Greece.
Yeah.
Even though Paul's time there was relatively short, his visit to Athens is this powerful moment where different ideas collide.
It's like that scene of him on Mars Hill debating with the philosophers.
Well, it's almost cinematic, isn't it?
It is.
And speaking of cinematic, think about Corinth.
Ooh, Corinth.
This bustling port city, strategically located on that isthmus, known for, well, let's just say its worldly distractions.
Right.
That's where the gospel's message of morality and redemption would have stood out in stark contrast to the culture around it.
It's almost like they were complete opposites.
In many ways, yes. And it's also in Corinth where we find that inscription mentioning the proconsul Gallio.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
That little detail helps us pinpoint when Paul was actually there.
It's like solving a little historical puzzle.
Exactly. Those seemingly small details help us connect the dots, you know, and really ground these events in their historical context.
It's almost like we have a time machine.
It is, in a way.
Yeah.
Each discovery brings us one step closer to understanding what it was like to live in that world.
I love that. All right, so moving on to Paul's third journey. He spends a considerable amount of time in Ephesus.
Oh, Ephesus, which Dr. Phillips described as a true megacity of the ancient world.
Yeah.
A center of trade, religion, and, well, you know, maybe even a bit of chaos.
She talked about that riot, right?
Right.
With all those people packed into that giant theater, furious at Paul because he was challenging their devotion to Artemis.
It's a vivid reminder of the real opposition that these early Christians had to face.
And they were still so brave. It really makes you appreciate their courage.
Absolutely. And even in places that weren't as big, like Miletus, where we have that inscription about the seating for Jews and God-fearers, it gives us a glimpse into this very complex social and religious landscape they were navigating.
You know, I found myself wondering what it would have felt like to be a Christian back then.
Yeah.
Surrounded by all these different beliefs and practices, yet holding fast to your own faith.
It's a really interesting question to ponder, isn't it?
It is. Because in a way, it's a similar challenge that we face as Christians today.
That's true. We live in a world that often doesn't share our values.
All right. So we've followed in Paul's footsteps.
We have.
Seen these bustling cities.
And encountered all the challenges and triumphs of the early church.
Yeah, but the story doesn't end there.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
Let's jump into the book of Revelation and meet the seven churches of Asia Minor.
These churches are fascinating because each one gets this unique message from Christ.
They do.
Highlighting their strengths, their weaknesses, and the specific pressures that they were facing.
And what's amazing is how the stuff that's been dug up,
the archaeological remains.
Yeah, how those connect directly to what we read in Revelation.
It's incredible, isn't it?
It is. So in Pergamum, for example, we have these ruins of the Trajanium and the Asclepian.
Right.
Those sites really give you a sense of what the pagan world would have been like all around those early Christians.
It's like watching the Bible come to life before your very eyes.
It is.
And remember what Dr. Phillips said about the altar of Zeus there?
Oh, yeah.
It might actually be the very altar that's mentioned in Revelation chapter 2.
Oh, wow. That gives me chills just thinking about it.
It really brings the text to life, doesn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so then you've got Sardis.
Ah, yes, Sardis. A city known for its strategic location and its, you know, seemingly impenetrable walls.
It sounds like they thought they were invincible.
Precisely. But the message to the church there is a stark warning. Wake up.
Kind of ironic, isn't it?
It is. It reminds us that even when we feel secure and successful, spiritual complacency can be a dangerous trap.
So true. And then there's Laodicea, which is known for its, well, its lukewarm water.
Oh, yes. Laodicea. Dr. Phillips explained how the city was situated between Hierapolis with its hot springs and the cooler water flowing down from the mountains.
Right, I remember that.
But by the time that water reached Laodicea, it wasn't hot or cold, just lukewarm.
And that's exactly how Christ describes the church there.
Exactly. It's such a powerful metaphor.
It is.
Christ wants his followers to be passionate, all in or all out, rather than this kind of, you know, apathetic middle ground.
So it seems like where these cities were located, what the culture was like, it all played a part in those specific messages they received in Revelation.
Oh, absolutely. It wasn't a one-size-fits-all approach.
Each message was tailored.
Yes, tailored to their particular needs and their unique situation.
I never thought about it that way before.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. So we've talked about empires, geography, Paul's strategic journeys. And we've gotten these amazing glimpses into the seven churches of Revelation.
We have. It's been quite a journey so far.
It has.
And I think as we continue our deep dive, it's important to remember that all this historical and geographical context, it's essential for understanding the challenges and triumphs of these early Christian communities.
It's not just about some far-off history.
Right? No, it's about understanding the very foundation of our own faith.
That's a great way to put it. So as we move forward, I want everyone listening to think about this. How did the specific locations and cultures of those early churches shape the messages they received in the book of Revelation?
That's a great question to ponder.
It is.
Yeah.
And we'll delve into that more in the next part of our deep dive into the world of early Christianity in Asia Minor and Greece.
Welcome back to our exploration of early Christianity.
So last time we left off with a question.
I did.
How did all that, you know, the geography and culture,
right?
How did that influence the messages that each of those seven churches got in Revelation?
It's such a cool question because it makes you think outside the box, you know?
Yeah.
It's not just about the words themselves. It's about where these churches were, what was going on around them.
Okay, yeah.
It's almost like each of these churches is a character.
I like that.
Each with their own setting and backstory.
Right.
Take Ephesus, for example.
Okay, Ephesus.
Dr. Phillips talked about how it was this huge commercial center.
Right.
With the Temple of Artemis, one of the wonders of the ancient world.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like a place that was just steeped in materialism and paganism.
And when you read the message to the Ephesian church in Revelation, it's like Christ is speaking directly to that.
He is. He commends them for their hard work and their perseverance.
Mm-hmm.
But he warns them against losing sight of what's truly important.
It's losing their first love, right?
Exactly. Mm. Not letting all the distractions of the world, the busyness, the allure of wealth and status overshadow their devotion to him.
It makes so much more sense when you consider where they were, what they were dealing with.
It really does. And then you have Smyrna.
Smyrna, okay.
A city known for its like unwavering loyalty to Rome, which meant that if you were a Christian in Smyrna, you were likely facing some pretty intense persecution.
Yeah, I remember Dr. Phillips mentioned that some early Christians were even martyred in Smyrna.
Exactly. And the message Christ gives to the church in Smyrna reflects that reality.
He doesn't sugarcoat it.
No, not at all. He acknowledges their suffering, encourages them to stay strong, and promises them that ultimate reward, the crown of life.
It's such a powerful message of hope, especially given their circumstances.
It is. And then, of course, there's Laodicea.
Oh, yeah. But the lukewarm water.
Right. That image of lukewarm water.
It really sticks with you.
It does. And it's even more powerful when you consider that Laodicea was a wealthy city.
It was.
Owned for its banking, its textile industry, all that.
They had it all, didn't they?
They did. It was a place of comfort and affluence, which makes Christ's message all the more striking.
He calls them lukewarm.
Exactly. It's like he's saying, you've become too comfortable, too complacent. You've lost your spiritual fervor.
You've settled for the middle ground.
Yes. And he challenges them to wake up, to re-examine their priorities.
To find that fire again.
Exactly. So we see how where each of these cities was and what it was like to live there really impacted the messages they received.
It's not just a random collection of letters, right?
Not at all. It's this incredibly nuanced, carefully crafted message tailored to each community's specific situation.
And I think that speaks to the power of Revelation, even for us today.
I agree.
Because while the specific challenges might be different now, the underlying themes are still so relevant.
Absolutely. Faithfulness, perseverance, staying true to your beliefs when the world around you is pulling you in a different direction.
Those are things we all grapple with.
They are. Now let's zoom out a bit and think about the bigger picture, the religious landscape of Asia Minor and Greece during this time.
Okay, yeah.
Dr. Phillips painted a picture of a world that was just full of all these different gods and goddesses.
Polytheistic, right?
Yes, with these magnificent temples and elaborate rituals.
It's easy to forget that back then, religion wasn't just something you did on Sundays.
It wasn't compartmentalized like it often is today.
It was woven into every aspect of life.
It was. From birth to death, the gods and goddesses were present.
And you had all these different beliefs and practices mixed together.
You did. Alongside the traditional Greek and Roman deities, you also had the rise of these mystery cults.
Like the cult of Asclepius, right?
Exactly. Promising healing, salvation, a glimpse into the afterlife.
It's wild to think about.
It is. And it makes you wonder how those early Christians navigated such a complex religious landscape.
They must have felt constant pressure to conform.
Absolutely. They were surrounded by all these different worldviews, all these different gods.
And yet they held on to their faith.
They did. It's a testament to their conviction.
It's also a reminder that we face similar pressures today.
We do. Maybe not temples dedicated to Zeus, but we're still bombarded with messages that challenge our faith.
Things that try to pull us away from God.
Exactly. But just like those early Christians found strength in their community and their commitment to Christ, so can we.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, something Dr. Phillips said about the Temple of Apollo at Dedima really struck me.
Oh, what was that?
She was describing how massive the columns were.
Oh, yes.
Like, you could barely even see the people standing next to them.
It would have been awe-inspiring.
It would have been overwhelming, almost.
I think that was the point, you know?
To make you feel small.
To make you feel insignificant in the presence of these powerful gods.
Right. It was all about power and grandeur.
It was. And what's so striking is the contrast with early Christianity.
You mean how they didn't have all those fancy temples and statues?
Exactly. They met in homes, in marketplaces, wherever they could gather.
Their focus was on something different.
It was. It wasn't about outward displays of power.
It was about the transformation of the heart.
Exactly. Their God wasn't confined to some building. He dwelt within them through the Holy Spirit.
That's such a powerful reminder that faith isn't about the externals, right?
It's not. It's about that personal relationship with God.
It's about letting his presence change you from the inside out.
So as we wrap up this part of our deep dive, let's take a moment to appreciate those early Christians.
Okay.
Their courage, their resilience in the face of all that opposition.
Yeah, they faced persecution. They were tempted by the pagan world all around them.
And yet their faith flourished. They spread the gospel, planted churches, laid the foundation for what we have today.
They changed the world.
They did. And as we head into the final part of our exploration, I want to leave you with this. How can we in our own lives apply the lessons we've learned from these early Christians?
That's a great question. Stick with us as we wrap up our journey through early Christianity in Asia Minor and Greece in the next part of our deep dive. All right, so welcome back to our final part of this deep dive into early Christianity in Asia Minor and Greece. We've covered a lot of ground, haven't we?
We have.
Empires, maps, Paul's journeys.
Yeah.
Those incredible messages to those churches in Revelation.
Yeah.
And now we're left with this, like, this challenge. How do we actually apply what we've learned to our lives today?
Yeah, that's the big question, isn't it? Because it's easy to get caught up in thinking about it as just, you know, ancient history.
Yeah.
But Dr. Phillips makes this really compelling argument that these early Christians, they have a lot to teach us about living out our faith, even now.
So what are some of those key takeaways, you think?
Well, I think one of the most striking things is their incredible dedication to their faith, even when it was really, really hard.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. They were facing persecution, pressure to conform, even threats of violence.
Right.
It really makes you stop and think, like, how strong is my own faith? Would I be willing to risk everything for it?
Yeah. Would I be willing to stand up for what I believe in if it meant losing my job, my friends, maybe even my safety?
Tough question, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
But their example shows us that our loyalty, our ultimate allegiance is to Christ, not to anything else in this world.
Right.
Their faith wasn't just something they did on the Sabbath. It was a way of life, you know?
Yeah, it was everything.
It was everything.
And that commitment to Christ, it seems like it was really tied to their commitment to each other, too.
Oh, absolutely. Dr. Phillips really emphasized that the early church wasn't just about individual belief.
Right.
It was about community.
Yeah, yeah.
They came together for worship, for fellowship, for support.
They took care of each other.
They did. They understood that they were part of something much bigger than themselves.
It was like a family.
In many ways, it was. A family united by their love for Christ.
That sense of belonging, that must have been so important for them, especially when the world around them was so hostile.
It would have been essential.
And it makes me think about how important it is for us to find that kind of community today, too.
I agree. In a world that can feel really isolating at times, we need those connections.
We need those people who understand us, who support us, who challenge us to grow.
We weren't meant to do this alone.
Right. We need each other to stay strong, to hold each other accountable, to remind each other of the truth when things get tough.
Exactly. And, you know, another thing we can learn from them is their boldness in sharing their faith.
Yeah, they didn't shy away from talking about Jesus.
No, they didn't. And remember, in many parts of the Roman Empire, Christianity was seen as this subversive, even dangerous sect.
It was kind of like being a rebel, in a way.
In a way, yes. And yet, they persisted. They told their stories. They shared their hope. They invited others to join them.
And it worked. Their faith spread like wildfire.
It's inspiring, isn't it?
Yeah, but it also kind of makes you think, am I doing enough to share my faith with others? Or am I letting fear hold me back?
That's a good question for all of us to ask ourselves, because the early church's impact, it really came down to their willingness to step out of their comfort zones.
Right. They weren't afraid to be different.
They understood that the gospel wasn't just for them. It was for everyone.
So looking back at this whole journey we've taken, exploring the world of early Christianity, I'm blown away by their courage and their resilience.
I am too. They faced so many challenges, and yet they never gave up.
Their story isn't just ancient history.
It's a legacy that we can carry on today.
Yeah, their example shows us that we can make a difference too, no matter where we are, no matter what we're facing.
Exactly. Their story reminds us that with Christ, all things are possible.
That's a great message to end on. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, everyone.
It's been a pleasure exploring this with you.
We hope you've been inspired to learn more about the early church and to think about how their journey can impact your own faith.